Mics are live.
This is about the right now.
Yeah. Poor Brian. I'm like pig pen. I've got this little cloud. Yeah. Floating around me. Nobody's near me.
I don't think we've got to go all over the room necessarily.
All right. Well, good afternoon, everyone. I'm Commissioner Brian Crashus. We are recording this. So you will be immortalized in the recording itself. But I don't have any opening comments, but with me are Commissioner Randy Christman, Commissioner Julie Fedorachek. I don't know if they have any opening comments. If they do, we'll pause for that, and then we'll go around the table.
I do not.
I'll just say thank you for coming. I appreciate the opportunity to talk through this stuff. We don't normally get a lot of consumer contacts from Otter Tail customers, so the last couple of months have been kind of an unusual experience for us, and Stacy and I have been in close contact about these, and I just appreciate your willingness to come in and just walk through everything together so we all have a really good understanding about what's going on and how best to communicate with the customers about it. So thank you. I look forward to our conversation today.
Stacy, do you want to introduce yourself? We'll go around with introductions. Yes.
I'm Stacy Ebrill, Consumer Affairs Specialist with the Commission.
Victor Shook with Commission staff.
Ron Spangler, Manager of Customer Care and Relations for Otter Tail Power Company.
Stuart Tomerdahl, Manager of Regulatory Administration for Otter Tail Power.
And I'm Matt Olson, Manager of Regulatory Proceedings and Compliance with Otter Tail Power. And I'll kind of MC today, so you guys let me know when you're ready for me to dive in.
I think we're ready for you to dive in, and then we'll ask questions along the way, I'm sure. And
yep.
But, yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Very good. I do have a presentation that I'll step us through. Maybe before I do that, I'll just offer that, you know, we kind of have a bigger crew than probably we would normally bring, but really we have is some folks from regulatory and some folks from customer service, and I'll maybe just introduce them so you know who is in the room here. So myself from regulatory and Stuart as well. Also, Wendy Olson and Brett Jacobs, who are our primary contacts with the Consumer Affairs Office. And then from customer service, Ron introduced himself already. Kayla Esslinger is our customer service manager up in Devil's Lake. And Colin Kramer is our supervisor of customer care and really supports our customer service representatives who are directly answering the customer calls as they come in and equipping them with you know, a lot of the information they need to respond. And Kayla does that as well. And then on the phone, we also have our area manager from Jamestown, Jeremy Ram. And he supports really all of our state of North Dakota, so can speak to some questions as they might pertain. We'll look to him to do that.
How come Jeremy didn't?
So the freeway was closed. Kayla, through some quick thinking, found her way all the way around freeway. But
could have snowmobiled, Jeremy. Come on.
Yeah.
I know it. The only way, I think.
Okay, so
excuse me, really quick,
here,
Matt, is Colin based at your headquarters, or is he in North Dakota too? Okay, yeah. Thank you.
Good luck, Colin. Okay, does some driving, of course, so but primarily for his falls. Okay, so our presentation here. While we were coming out, we thought we'd touch on a few of the things that we've been talking to the commission about recently. So we'll just a real quick note on our final rates coming out of our rate case. And likewise, the status of our customer information system that you've heard about a lot. I'll talk for just a minute or two on our performance in the end of January timeframe where we experienced some very extreme temperatures. And then get into some of the explanations for an increase in calls that both Otter Tail and the Commission has been receiving of late. Okay. Note then here on final rates, I just wanted to sort of mention this here. We did implement our final rates from our rate case in the beginning of February, and there were some things that came out of our case that sort of mechanically changed in our customer bills, which I'll touch more on later. But you know, one of the things in particular is that we moved certain projects out of the riders into the rates, so they kind of moved in one direction. And then going the other direction, we moved all of our fuel out of base rates and into the energy adjustment charge. And again, we'll talk more about that here in a few minutes. But just remember those mechanical things occurred as of the beginning of February. We also are expecting interim rates to happen here. Refunds to happen in April. So we're close to that occurring, and we've made the full transition from interim to finals then as of February, and we'll keep moving forward.
Matt.
Yes.
I'm not trying to derail you. I promise you. But the energy adjustment. Right. At some point, we'll be going over the bill lines.
Yeah.
What is included in each line? Okay.
Yeah, we'll spend some detail on that. We certainly want to provide that. Okay, as it relates to our new customer information system, you've heard it as CIS-1. That system went live on February 4th and required, of course, extensive training for our staff leading up to that date, as well as a lot of testing of various components of that transition. So I listed some metrics there. I'll advance this, I guess. Of the amount of data that had to be converted, moved over from the old system. And if you remember from our prior descriptions, our old system was very old, and we've been using it for 30 years. And so to make that migration was quite a step, a good one. And we've come out of it very well. That conversion occurred in those days and leading up to that time frame. But that factors into what we want to explain here more fully as we go into the presentation or two. So I'll go on. Okay, just because it was so noteworthy and sort of monumental, wanted to mention here the cold weather that we had in January. And I understand out here it wasn't maybe quite as cold, but still very cold.
Oh, it was plenty cold. We just don't complain about it as much as Minnesotans.
And I consider it in general bragging rights. So, but overall, a couple of kind of noteworthy things. Throughout the month of January, our customers experienced the below normal temperatures of on average 4.5 degrees. And in February, just the sustained cold we had got us to 12.3 degrees below what our normal temperatures would be for that time period. So as we'll talk about here, that sort of translates into, what our customers end up paying on their bills as it relates to heating load. But certainly that was the reality of the situation then, both on those extreme days and kind of throughout the last couple months here. We did have, at least a temperature of negative 38 and below in some spots even. And throughout that time, our system did perform very well. We did have some very limited, isolated outages, but they were able to be restored in as quickly as possible, actually. A matter of very few hours, I think, is the longest we had. So really quite good system. I think everybody feels very positive about how things held together and served customers during that time. I put in here a slide of sort of what the temperatures experienced, and this is from the National Weather Service, and it actually happens to cover pretty much exactly Otter Tail service territory, which is the western part of Minnesota and the eastern part of North Dakota here. And you just see some of the cold temps that show up there. And I don't know how many hours, that was sustained, but certainly, a really quite a low day in that way in temperatures. So not records everywhere, but some places it certainly was. All right, with that, I will go on to describing some of the calls that Otter Tail has been receiving and the commission as well in the last few weeks here. Historically, Otter Tail has about one call a month that comes through the Consumer Affairs Office, and so we've definitely seen an uptick from that. We have had 17 calls, complaints that have come through the Consumer Affairs Office in the last several weeks here. Positively, I think all but three as of this morning and maybe even all but one now have been of those have been resolved. So we've worked with the customers and figured out a path forward for them. So that's very favorable, I think.
Can you give a few examples of when you say resolved, the customer understands the bill and, okay, now I understand, I'll pay it, may not be happy about it, or is there a different type of resolution you're coming up with?
Yep. A lot of it is explanation as to what are the drivers that we're talking about here in terms of what caused a higher than expected bill. But also there are some situations where folks realize the magnitude of their bill and then can go on budget billing, which is an even monthly payment option for them that would help it soften the blow in the near term and spread those payments out over the next year. So that is certainly a resolution.
Okay. And what about customers that were simply told the PSC raised your rates?
Yep. So there's certainly a lot more to the story, and we have had to circle back with those customers and explain what are the various factors in all the things that really are happening in customer bills right now. Give them that full explanation. Sometimes it's helped. They have understood. Sometimes, you know, they may hear it and hopefully appreciate it, but the reality is that they're faced with a significant bill, and that's, you know, that's that can be hard to you know, want to have to come up the money somehow and pay the bill. So those are the ones we really want to work with and help them be able to get an option to extend that out or make it even monthly for the coming future. We have been, since receiving that sort of message, I guess, from Consumer Affairs that our customers were kind of calling out that one particular reason, we've definitely done an education, circled back with our customer service representatives to give them, you know, better explanations. Some of that they had probably received before, but wanted to just reiterate that we need to make sure our customers are getting a full explanation. Other times we were looking to either circle back with a customer to add to what they've been told, or to you know, point out some parts of the bill that they may not have understood, or things that are changing here as of the transition to February. That's been an area of question that we've had.
Just to add on to that a little bit, and we'll get into this more later, but I was surprised when I heard that that was one of the lines that the customer service reps were giving to customers, especially in light of the fact that there were interim rates. So that should not have been a factor in the rates, in them having a higher bill. The interim rates were higher than the final rates, so that component of it should have been less. So the fact that the customer service reps had that in their talking points at any point is really disappointing to me, just because it's such a lightning rod and never will be able to give customers the full story about what's going on. So I don't expect you to have an answer for it or anything, but just know that that just isn't acceptable to me, that that's one of the talking points for why bills go up, especially so long after there's been interim rates in effect as an explanation for why customers' bills have jumped. When interim rates go in, yeah, that's why, but not after all of that. So,
Commissioner Fedorchuk, you're absolutely right. It was not alone a cause of an increase in bills, and it's, as you say, going from finals to interims, it is a decrease in the impact that they should be experiencing. If anything, the explanation really is about the moving of things within their bills, but not alone a cause for an increase.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's really the explanation that I think that we're trying to provide for them.
Right.
My main points have been articulated there now, but I'm just going to throw in one more thing. I appreciate balanced billing as an option, and for some people it can be very helpful. I don't look at it as great of a solution as I think our utility companies tend to look at it. And yes, when people are desperate, because they're maybe desperate isn't very frustrated, and you all present that as, well, here's the solution, we can balance this out, it might seem like the solution for them at the time, but a lot of these families, if they have kids in the summer, is when they have to pay daycare all day, as opposed to in the winter when they don't have to pay as much daycare. They may do watering or things like that in the summer. There's also other bills that are higher in the summer, and all you're doing is just shifting one of that box full of bills that they have to pay, part of it off to the summer that otherwise wouldn't be there. And I just don't think it's
as important a piece as it is, although I do think it is a good tool, but I just don't want it to be seen as a total solution.
Look, I think I'll go into your, some of the explanations here, and we can ask some more questions and dialogue as we go here. The next slide here talks about the various contributing factors, and we're going to go into each of these in more detail here, but just at a high level, so we're aware of the, sort of the waterfront here. We certainly had we have our cost of fuel and replacement energy experienced an increase, and Stuart Tomerdahl is going to talk a bit more about that here in just a minute. We also had some billing periods that were longer than typical, and again, we'll spend some time on that here. And then also we had this transition as we went to final rates from where on the bill the cost of energy showed up, and that definitely needed some explanation, and you could see where customers needed some further information on how that was impacting them. We did have a couple of meter reading issues that I'll talk about here, and then proration was a new presentment on the bills, and that, again, definitely requires a bit more explanation. So we had a couple of calls related to that. Just overall, sort of the extreme temps did compound the factors that are listed above. But we'll go into each of those in a bit more detail here then. So the first one is really the change of the rate in the cost of fuel. And I'll pass the mic here to Stuart Tomerdahl. I'll talk through a couple slides on that.
Okay, thanks, Matt. Yeah, what I want to do is just kind of reorientate you to the mechanics again of how the monthly rate is computed. And I'll have in a couple of slides, I'll provide some, you know, what we've seen with our cost of energy rate from December and now through what we're projecting into April. But when we think about how the rate is calculated for a particular month, it's based on a trailing four-month average of costs and usage that have occurred, you know, 4 months back. And then you have a month that you calculate that rate, and then the next month is when that rate goes into effect. And so, you know, for example, the rate that we put into effect in December was actually based on costs and usage from July through October. And so there's a different cost profile and usage profile during that period of time that derives whatever the rate will be, you know, for December. And, you know, January is August through November. And so that's the way the mechanics work. Just to put some context into the, you know, the following conversation now, if we move on to the next slide.
Before you leave that, Stuart, is that standard? I mean, is that all the... all of our utilities do it, and has that ever been a source of discussion?
Yeah, the methodology is standard. Then there would be a true-up with that as well. So they don't
true
get
up just
a true-up of actuals. So the fuel cost is the company gets to recover its actual costs. Mm-hmm. It doesn't get a return on that. So there's a true-up. I forget how often we do that. If it's
well, it's every month. It's part of every monthly calculation. There is a look back to see what collections have been, what your where your costs are at, and then the rate gets reset or adjusted based on whether there's, you know, an over or under collection balance.
And so you take an average and then add that to it or something?
Yep, and there's a slight and then that resets that next month's rate. And
Is it month, does when you do the 4 month average, you do it the past 4 months, but there's always every month a new rate?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
For the fuel?
Correct.
With fuel and purchase power, right?
Fuel and purchase power. Okay. Everything, all those costs that run together through the fuel clause. Couple of things that occurred this fall. Our Big Stone plant had a scheduled extended outage that ran from the middle of September through the middle of November this year. And this is The first major outage that we've had down there since the AQCS cutover back in 2015. So, you know, these things happen about every 3 years or so where you'll have a major maintenance outage, and this was the year for Big Stone. And so we had Big Stone off for a couple of months. We went out and procured, about half of that through forward purchases. We executed a contract back last summer to acquire 125 megawatts during peak periods, 100 megawatts off peak. We don't go and contract for the full, replacement because in these shoulder months, you never know quite where your loads are going to be, if you're going to need it all or not. Weather can really, fluctuate your system's demands. And so we usually try to target in that 60% range of where we're expecting maybe our loads are going to be and try to acquire fix the price so that we don't get too much exposure to the market. But generally, any balance that we can't supply from other resources in Otter Tail's supply, comes from the MISO market, and so that's where the balance of any energy that we may be needed during those outage periods came from, and that's typical the way we operate. We also did, have a few minor planned and forced outages at both Coyote and Big Stone. We had some tube leaks here and there, 2-3 days where a plant might have to come off and to fix something, come back on. The other factor that contributed a little bit during this time period is where we were had a little bit more exposure to the market. The LMP prices were actually higher in October and November than we'd typically seen. And part of that was driven through increased natural gas prices out in the broader market. And those marginal gas generation units throughout MISO often set that marginal LMP price. Well, if gas prices are higher, it has a direct effect on the LMPs, and so if we're playing in the market, we're it's a little bit. If you go to the next slide, Matt, this shows the LMP prices for Otter Tail's load zone from September through December, and it compares it to the same months for 2016 and 2017. The chart on the left is the on-peak time periods, and the chart on the right is the LMP price, average price for the month for the off-peak time period. And you can see in October and November, market prices were, especially in the on-peak period, close to about $10 a megawatt hour higher than what we had seen in the prior year, and even, that year before that was even lower than that.
Do you attribute that entirely to the nat gas prices?
Well, I can't say, it's 100%, but, I mean, we know that market
significant
gas prices went from the, the 270, 280 per MMBTU range. They were up over $4 for a period of time into October, November. And they've subsequently come back down. We've kind of seen.
It's incredibly interesting when you look at the fact that natural gas pricing decoupled from crude oil pricing 5, 6, 7 years ago with an overabundance of natural gas and became more of an elastic pricing model. And I thought, okay, there's a new normal for how natural gas reacts to market conditions, and it's more of an elastic pricing model versus the traditional inelastic model. And then all of a sudden this happened, and you saw a spike, and I just scratched my head and let no, and I, you can't control that, I understand that, but let no opportunity get away from you, right, if the market can be manipulated. That's frustrating to me, frankly.
Yeah. Was there any max gen events in MISO during that time period that you recall?
Year? Yeah.
wasn't there some this fall in September, some issues they had on the shoulder? No? Maybe not Max Gen, but No?
In January.
Yeah.
On the third, you know, at the end of January.
Seems like there was one in September, but it could have been further in the south, maybe in the south area. Okay, never mind.
In any case, you know, we've got a little more, you know, exposure to the MISO market during this time period. Prices were a bit higher. So what did that do to our rates? Slide 12, this is the bars go from what our December calculated fuel clause rate ended up being, and I'm showing the months carrying out now through what we're expecting our April rate. So let me orientate you to the chart here. The line, the black line across the top would be when we go through our monthly calculation, figure out what our rate would be based on the trailing 4 months of average costs and usage, that's what that black line reflects. And so when you look at December, for example, our calculated rate was about 2.2 cents, okay, for all of our fuel and purchase power and all the costs. That was the rate that we put into effect. The two components that make up that rate that and how they were included in the bill at that point in time, we were still on our older rates before final rates went into effect in February, so we had 2.4 cents of our recovery as part of our base rates, okay? So we had our base rates and 2.4. Yep, and that's the blue bars and both the December and January columns here. And so any base rate, you know, we were recovering 2.4 cents towards our fuel costs. Our actual rate was 2.2 cents, all inclusive for December. And so the fuel adjustment.
Where's 2.2
on? You see the first in the black line? Where the black line starts.
Oh, 2.2. Okay, got it. The starting point.
That's the net. If you look at the little orange block for December, we actually had a credit going back to customers through the fuel clause. Because we were collecting 2.4 cents in our base rates, but our rate that we were wanting to charge was only 2.2 cents. So we were actually giving, you know, a 0.002 cent credit through the fuel clause in December. So that, you know, the net of the base, the net of that credit equals the 2.2 cents. The red numbers that I showed here, we also had a separate rider for our reagents and emissions still in effect at that point in time. It's a very small amount, and that's something that ended up rolling into our fuel recovery now with the implementation of final rates after the rate case. So I just put that on here as note that that was one of the other things that is transitioning. So our rate in December was 2.2 cents. January, that net rate jumped up to about 2.9, almost 3 cents, if you follow the black line. And so we had our actual fuel clause went from a credit in December to a charge of 0.00536. So you see the orange bar on the top of the January column there. So we had a shift there in the charge and the cost, you know, that hit our customers' bills. And this is again you're starting to see the costs that we were incurring in October and November starting to influence the rates going forward here.
Stuart and maybe Victor, if you can step in. The part I'm struggling with is the light blue bar. Can you explain that one more time?
So in the base rate, there was a separate energy charge. So I believe that's
in the base rate that we approved, or what are you talking about now?
You can go ahead, Stuart.
Prior rates.
Right. So before the rate case, you had your basic service charge, which was, I think we were $8, I think, before the rate case. And then you had a base energy charge, okay, which was set at 2.4 cents per kilowatt hour.
I see.
And then what they're saying is in December, the energy didn't cost them that much, so we still had a fuel and purchase power rider. And since the average was less than that, customers were getting a credit back.
Yep.
Okay. Then we get into January, and the cost goes up because of some of those outages and the market prices being higher. So you go from a credit up to half a cent a kilowatt hour that the customers are paying. And then we get into February. After the rate case kicks in, we got rid of the base charge, and everything moves into the fuel and purchase power rider. So if customers are just looking at that fuel and purchase power rider line, they went from paying half a cent a kilowatt hour to now paying 3.1 cents per kilowatt hour in February. So to them, it's going to look like an incredible jump. But in reality, very small changes that are happening.
All right. So
hopefully that
just that explains that part of it. But the part that I then still struggle with is when we get rid of the volumetric charges or whatever and go to a higher customer charge.
Still the same net effect.
Why would that still be such a high charge? And then they should just be paying for the fuel cost.
They are. So it's...
Why is the rate... Why is that base rate stuff still in there? In the calculation.
Let me give it another shot. Okay, our total cost for January, okay, 2.9 cents, okay? When we sell a kilowatt hour to our customer, the base, their base, whatever base rate they're on, and they pay us that 8 cents for that kilowatt hour, 2.4 of that is covering our fuel costs, okay? So we have to take that into consideration to figure out how much we charge in just the rider so that we only collect the actual cost from the customer. So when we collected 2.4 of that 8 cents of our base rate is allocated against fuel costs. And the delta, the half a cent for December or January, is then charged in the fuel clause. So it's two mechanisms that are collecting the 2.9 or 3 cents of fuel costs.
I get that. It's when February comes.
Okay. In February, we implemented final rates. And coming out of the case, we moved the recovery of any of the fuel clause out of base rates. And so where we maybe had 8 cents before, now, absent any other changes from the case, 2.4 cents of that have come out of base rates. So your base is now only, you know, five cents. And so...
Pardon me, if I may, do you think it'd be helpful to just jump to that very, that portion of the bill where we have the specific example?
Yeah.
We certainly can. I don't know if it'll be helpful.
Okay. So at the end of the day, I mean, you're getting the 3 cents now with the new, you know, under our new rates, all of our fuel clause or costs are just going to be in the fuel clause. So
it's the rate that I'm curious about. But yeah, if you want to look at the bill, it might be helpful.
Before we Ron, are you thinking that if we jump over there, then you might finally understand the thing?
No. I think it'd be easy. I'm a picture guy, and it would be easier for me to see something.
Yep.
Let me ask this question before we dive into the bill.
Yep.
So you go with a four-month rolling average, and when there is a unique event, I hate to call it a one-off, but it's kind of a one-off, like the price, the spike.
Mm-hmm.
There's essentially a hangover, if you will, for four billing cycles. So when does this go the other way? Starting in June?
A lot of times in the summer months, you might see rates, you know, a little bit higher.
I'm not talking related to usage. I'm talking to, okay, then that's removed because you're going to be working off a higher rolling average mm-hmm. because of that spike. Well, it's got to go the other way. Mm-hmm. Once that
and
falls
starting,
off, correct?
Yeah, you're starting to see it hit in February or in April.
In April,
what the rate we're expecting? You know, it's
okay.
We're expecting it to come back down. And
so here's another question. When you have an event that's an unusual event, you know, fairly unusual. I mean, so you're going with this 4-month rolling average, and then it spikes, and okay, well, you don't know when it's going to end, but then all of a sudden it ends. Stockpiles look good. There's no apparent trouble on the horizon, so to speak, in terms of natural gas prices spiking again because the models all went, forecasts all drop mm-hmm. back into. Yeah, a fairly small range, a normal range. Why didn't you take that into account? Thinking, wow, this is going to really impact customers during the high usage months. And this is, I mean, couldn't you recognize that as a one-off and that it's going to have a negative impact with all the other things coming into play?
I think doesn't the tariff language spell out how the calculation has to be calculated?
Yeah, I mean
I can appreciate that.
Yeah.
I don't disagree. They could have maybe saw, you know, it turning around. I don't know that we want to kind of let it go willy-nilly, you know, not that we don't trust any of these guys, but, you know, letting a utility company go willy-nilly on how they're determining a fuel clause over the long term.
And one of the things, I mean, I think, because it's a 4-month average too, that does in of itself tend to kind of smooth some of these things out as well, versus maybe you know, just doing a most recent 2 months, you may see, you know, more fluctuations up and down. But,
no, I wasn't advocating going to a 2-month. I just and that makes sense, Victor, from the tariff language.
I'm gonna make another stab at the 2.4 cent thing here. So it's referring to it as base, but really it's being collected through base, but it's being applied to the fuel and purchase power cost.
Yeah.
As I say it, I don't know if that actually helped anything.
It didn't.
No, this comes out more complicated.
Take another strike. I think if we look at the bill,
Let's look at the bill.
All right, we'll go to that.
And I greatly
because then you can see the forward and the what comes adds on and what comes off, and you see it in totality. That's I think might be helpful.
Mm-hmm. So I mean, one thing we really want to talk about here on this slide is the proration as it's presented on customers' bills, and we can maybe talk about that for a second, and then kind of get into other things that show up here. Basically, what you have. The middle column is what's new to customers in February. Our system now is able to track and sort out and then also to present like this the usage that would be associated with a different rate if there's a rate change that happens within their cycle. And so you see here what's highlighted there towards the bottom, and actually one column up from that, or one row up from that, you see the fixed charge, how that is spread out amongst the days of the month that occurred in this person's bill before the 1st of February, and then the number of days that occurred after at the new rate. And then the kilowatt-hour rate also changing over that time period. And actually, you can see pretty well what Stuart was describing a minute ago is, again, the far left is January, so that's old and interim rates, and then final rates are what's represented in the middle column there, and you see what's highlighted is that change in the base portion of the bill, and you see that drop, like Stuart was describing, and where that's going to drop out of that section, and it's going to show up, it's going to, you know, in the bill, it's going to move over to the far right in the bottom row of that far right column, energy and renewable adjustment, you see that's listed as 4686 for this particular customer. This is being used with permission and no information is being shared. But normally, if you just think back to this slide that Stuart was describing, when you see this orange chart, and Victor mentioned this too, when you see this orange bar, the sliver at the top, go to the full amount that's represented in the energy adjustment rider in February bills, what you probably would have seen is a reduction in the base portion that would have offset that. In reality, what happened, I think, for most customers is that we had longer billing cycles, which we haven't quite talked about yet. We had increased usage because of the cold. And what happened then is your base portion didn't seem like it went down at all. Perhaps it maybe even went up. So that didn't seem like you got the offset of fuel moving over into the rider portion. And then at the same time, the amount of fuel was going up. And so you saw the increase happen in this far right column of the bill.
Okay. I think I've got the biggest question that I'm struggling with, and it really isn't related to anything more than what my understanding was on, because of what I've been told in over and over, that the cost of fuel is a pass-through. This is just what the company is paying for fuel. So why is there this base rate calculation thrown in there that's not part, like that's not what you're paying for the fuel and passing along to the customer, and in the way I would envision how it's calculated. Why would you be calculating that way? Do you understand what I'm struggling with?
So we're getting away from that confusing system, and the move to final rates, I think, accomplishes exactly what you're hoping, which is that what is represented in the energy and adjustment charge on the far right will be exactly what you had in mind. It is the company's fuel is going to show up right there.
Okay, then why is this cost of the fuel? Is it just because of the average?
It fluctuates on the four-month rolling.
But, like, why does that orange bar on that slide, the middle one, why does it still show, why is it as high as it is when you're getting rid of the base rate portion?
We're moving the base rate portion. So what we're saying is there used to be 2.4 cents collected in the for the rate case.
Right.
But that 2.4 cents was part of the fuel and purchase power calculation. So after the rate case, we wanted all of that fuel and purchase power in the fuel and purchase power adjustment, and only there, not in base. So we moved it.
But that then isn't just fuel, the cost of fuel and purchase power. It's some set fee that we added to the rate case.
No.
It's...
So before we were taking some of the cost of the gas.
Yes.
This doesn't make any sense at all. The cost of the gas is the cost of the gas, and that is just set. Why does it get back to this calculation of a certain
base? The last rate case in 08, they wanted to move all of this stuff in, but I don't think they were willing to take the hit on how big of an increase it would look like. Because, you know, that's what we're kind of dealing with, is it looks like a really big increase to customers because all this, this 2.4 cents a kilowatt hour is moving into the energy rider that to customers looks like it wasn't there before. Mm-hmm. It was, but it was collected in another
bucket
place.
On the bill.
Right. Yep.
It was under the base rate.
What they're saying is,
this
is, on the left here, this is the base rate for energy. Before the rate case, this is after it went from 7.4 cents down to 5.4.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that base rate, as a result of the rate case, went down on a volumetric basis. The fixed went up because we agreed to move it up.
Yep.
And then the energy went up, I think, by a proportional amount from what the volumetric went down.
Mm-hmm.
Are you guys getting this?
I think so.
You bet.
I mean, I just can't get the cost of the gas. I mean, cost of gas, why would it ever be in base rates?
I mean, 100 years it was base rates. The fuel was in base rates.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Okay.
What they used to do in a rate case, you know, like if you're looking back in history and how this grew up, what they used to do in a rate case is they'd come in, set rates, and included in the rate would be as much of the fuel cost as they thought they could put in there.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
They would put it all in there, and then the adjustment month to month would be small.
Mm-hmm.
Under the new concept, we're putting all the fuel costs into the fuel adjustment mm-hmm. instead of just
okay.
that little bit.
Pat wins.
I sense, and I'm curious, and will say that I'm all wrong. It was sort of along the same philosophical concept of rate cases years ago were often whatever a lot of the increased amount was passed off on commercial and industrial and keeping the residential rates as low as possible, which got us the disparity we've been working through in some recent cases and trying to get things more accurate to what their actual cost of service are. Mm-hmm. And I think the old rate system that they used was sort of in that same concept. It just looked better, maybe.
Maybe it didn't fluctuate as much.
Yeah, it may not have. I mean, back in those olden days, there wasn't as much market possibilities, you know, so it wouldn't fluctuate all that often. You kind of knew your cost of
okay. Sorry. I get it now.
That's great. I mean, we welcome the questions, and it's good.
Yeah.
It's great dialogue. It's important for us to, I think, explore this all so we have a good understanding of what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, our customers are grappling with this same thing without the luxury maybe of having a full dialogue like this, so it's useful to spend this time here.
I'm not very good at pretending I know what I'm talking about. I just have to get it.
A question that may not really be so important in what we're trying to explore here, but do you have customers whose billing date is like every day of the month, or do you have one day a week when you have a series of them, or what's the timing of your bill cycles?
So we have roughly 20 billing cycles every month, and depending upon how many days are in the month, those billing cycles will shift because we bill Monday through Friday, not on a weekend and not on a holiday.
Does every utility do that, or are there some that it's just like January as opposed to February?
I guess I can't say for certain, but I would think that most utilities would bill during the regular business day and they maybe don't have 20 billing cycles in a month. I know some utilities spread out their bills differently than we do. Ours is really just due to being able to read meters, and then ultimately after we get the bills out, being able to process payments as they come in. That's kind of what drives us in terms of how we are currently structured with billing cycles.
MDU and NSP operate similar to Otter Tail. They have lots of billing cycles. There's not like very few customers that are on a perfect month.
We try to target roughly a 30-day billing period, but because of the variation of days in a month and how the cycles typically fall, we don't always hit that, but we're typically fairly close with the exception of what Matt was going to talk about here shortly.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to that actually right now. As Ron mentioned, normally we'd have a pretty uniform billing cycle, and you know, if you get red on the 10th day of January, as it works out, you know, it'll be within a few days of that same day the next month, so your bill would represent 30-ish or 30, you know, one, somewhere right in between there on a normal routine. But again, sort of one of these things that has compounded the factors that are impacting this particular time period for us is that in our transition from our old customer information system to our new one, we had to complete the billing under the old system, close business there, you know, sort of lock that down, and then make the transition to the new system. And there was a time period required to move the data over and to start billing in the new system. To accommodate that, what we did is we moved our billing days up. So many customers had shorter than the normal cycle in December. They might have had 20, 22, something like that, number of days in that bill. And then that was repeated again in January when we shifted our go-live date back from January 1 to February 1. But then in February, we delayed by a couple of days the beginning of our normal cycles. So customers saw longer time periods between bills that they received in January and bills they received in February. And that length, again, if you average that with December, with the prior month, I should say, it accounts for 2 months' worth of days being billed, but it happened to make their bill they received in February include more days and then, you know, represent a higher amount due.
So December was fewer days. January was?
A normal month.
No. Didn't you have to make up for the December days that were lost? Didn't those have to be included in January?
We did early in, we did the same time period in January as we did in December, because when we moved the go-live date back 1 month, we were able to just repeat, with the exception of the holidays that occurred in December. Is that
so how many billing days in December and January were there, each separate?
Well, we still billed the same 20 cycles. We just had to bill them over a shorter period of time because we had less days to bill them. In December, when we were originally going to go move forward with the new system, we moved everything up so that we could have enough time at the end of the month to get all those bills completed before the end of December. Since that didn't occur, we had to kind of repeat that in January. But in both cases, we billed all 20 cycles. It's just we ended up billing some of those cycles multiples, basically two cycles on several days.
In this cycle, can you tell me how many billing days, like how many days they paid for in December and January? Or isn't that relevant?
It actually would range depending upon when the customer, we have a typically about a 4 day read window mm-hmm. to read meters. And the bill is based on previous read date to current read date. Mm-hmm. So depending upon where the customer fell in that read window back in starting in November compared to when we moved their read date up in December, that read date could be anywhere between, as Matt indicated, 22 days. Some were as low as 21. And I think we had a couple or a few that were as many as 40 days over the course of this entire period.
So your example here is 32, 33 days, but there were some that were pushing up to 40 days?
We did have a customer, I think, that had contacted in that particular instance had a 40-day billing period.
This is, I mean, anecdotally, did you have 20% of your customer base that were 35 days or more, 60% that were just right, and 20% that were light, or I don't know, I'm just throwing numbers out. What? And there must have been a group of customers that were, you know, pushing the limits of, you know, a 40-day billing cycle, that it was most pronounced the jump in their bill. How many, I mean, was that a third of your base customer, residential customers? Was it a quarter? I mean, just...
You know, I've not run that analysis. We can certainly go back and take a look at how many would have been affected. So I can't speak for certain on how many were affected in that manner.
Just trying to get a handle on how widespread it was.
Yeah.
Would there have been a way for you guys to mediate this? Like, just give them shorter cycles for a couple months to get back on schedule so they didn't have this big spike?
During the course of putting these schedules together, we tried to do that as best we could, given the amount of days, because every customer, we need to issue them a bill every month. And in order to get the payment periods in all three states to line up, as well as get the customer's meters read in that period of time, we did our best to make sure that we met all of those requirements, not only with the state rules, but also what's in our general rules and regulations.
How much longer will you be reading meters like this as opposed to just an electronic thing that you have at the office?
You mean manually reading meters? Right. We don't have a date certain yet, but we have looked at other ways to read meters remotely. We haven't made any affirmative decisions on when that might be, though.
All your meters are read manually now?
We have a, I think it's like 1% or so that we do read remotely. But otherwise, the vast majority of our meters are read by personnel.
So do you have, and you can block out the customer number, the account details, so I don't care about that. But can you provide an example of, here's a customer that, in December, it was billed at the 22-day average, an average usage customer, and then got hit with the 40, 40 day. I want to see the two extremes. Just to, you know, as a consumer.
I have some.
Do you?
Right here in front of me, but okay. I'll give you some too, but I can certainly share with you some of the ones that.
Do you think you have what I'm looking for then?
Yep, I have some examples.
Okay. Okay.
I was going to mention too with the billing period thing, just going back to the communications about it. All of the customers that I talked to, until I pointed that out to them, they didn't notice that. You know, you have to actually look at the dates on there to see the number of days. And most people don't look that closely, so I would point out to them, oh, yeah, you actually have 40 days on here. And they're like, oh. And then that kind of made sense to them. So I think I had asked you before, I don't know if there's any way when it's not normal to indicate that to the customer that, like, this is 40 days, because unless you look at the exact dates, it's hard for them to realize that that happened. And maybe it doesn't become an issue in the future because this doesn't happen again, but that would have helped with that part of it too, because they just didn't even realize it until you pointed out the dates to them. And then they were like, oh, yeah, that's 40 days. So,
you know, along those lines, because for every person who calls in, there are probably 10, 20, whatever the ratio is, that are unhappy when it comes to getting a customer service call. And while I'll echo the thoughts, you know, in terms of saying, well, the PSC raised the rates, obviously don't like it. But I also know it's hard being a customer service representative, and basically you get beat up. Right, Stacey? But all CSRs do. But I'm just wondering, when I'm trying to think of, okay, so how many people did it really impact? And one thing that's been going through my mind is, do they deserve some type of a bill stuffer explaining what happened in December and January? And we can circle back on that if we go through the other thing. But I don't know how many are going to fully understand what happened or just say, well, I guess that's the way it is, and have a sour taste in their mouth. Not that you want to bring up a negative a second time around, but we can talk about that a little bit more.
You didn't do a bill stuffer about the new system, the new bills, new system, anything like that?
No, we did do several forms of communication about things that were changing. Certainly we had, you know, things come out of our rate case, and at least calling that out, that was changing. But the magnitude of that probably, you know, it turned out to be maybe more than they might have expected there, too. So even if they had received the notice about it before, it still might be somewhat of a shock.
Mm-hmm.
I understood that. I maybe have just one or two other things I want to touch on. One is meter reads. We did have a couple of calls that related to meter reading issues, and one was an incorrect read where we sent a representative out and got the correct reading, and one was a case where we had an unoccupied home that became occupied, but in the first month of occupation, there was a zero read there. So that was one where the second month, of course, and they had two full months of usage showed up, and that needed to be corrected because it was a lot that showed up there. So, and then I just noted we have, you know, roughly 70,000 meters that we read each month. So those are all fitting in those 20 cycles that Ron mentioned. In terms of order, my slides, I have the proration one that we already looked at included in there, and just the reiteration that the weather kind of compounded all these various things that were happening in this time period. You know, moving things within the bill, which understandably can cause confusion. You had increases in some costs for the fuel in particular, and compounding that, you know, we had some longer cycles and some extreme temperatures, which, you know, really exaggerated the usage that happened there. And all those things fit together, and those are what we're trying to sort through and explain as well as possible to customers right now. So,
when we're talking on the bill, the energy and renewable adjustment, that's the fuel cost, right?
Yes.
And renewable adjustment is in there to recognize
Renewable rider.
The renewable rider.
Why are those the same? Renewable rider. So the cost of the capital investments for your wind energy projects are being collected in the same line as the fuel cost?
They're, and this gets back to our old legacy billing system. We had a lot of constraints on how we could present certain charges on a customer's bill. And while their separate charges are calculated, you know, they would get aggregated and rolled up into this one line on the customer's bill. We just had limitations in that old billing system to that precluded us from saying, you know, here's a line for the renewable rider, here's a renewable or a line for the transmission rider, here's a line for the energy adjustment rider, you know, whatever riders we had. We were, the old system, we were constrained on bill presentment. I think the new system is going to allow us in the future, you know, to make changes such that we can be more transparent and have those kinds of things called out if desired on the customer's bill.
And what's stopping that from happening now, now that you have the new system? Do we have to make changes? Is that something in the tariffs that these two have to be together? Because I don't think it makes sense to have them together.
I think we could direct the company to have separate line items for those items. I did find back in 08 there was some discussion from Mike Diller about recommending to include them in one line. At that time, the reasoning was because a wind farm renewable rider was seen to him as similar to energy because that's the type of resource that it's providing. That was the reasoning why he had agreed at the time to include it as one line item in the bill. But I do agree with Stuart that it is two completely separate calculations. It's just that for purposes of the bill, it's rolled up into one.
I think for customers it would be beneficial to understand one is fuel and one is the cost of paying for these wind farms.
I would agree. I would be in full support of separating.
I do get that comment a lot. When they call and they see renewable, the first thing they say is, we're paying for those wind towers, aren't we?
Well, and they are. It's just that there's fuel in there, too, so they really can't tell how much.
You can't tell that that involves fuel at all by that name. Yeah, so they don't know that.
Speaking of the line item at the top, this is a curiosity question. So you've got interim rate adjustment. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at an actual customer bill that says ND, interim rate adjustment.
Indy.
Yeah, North Dakota.
Mm-hmm.
How come they're different?
Can you tell me what the date is on that bill, please?
The last one, I think, in this sequence is an end reading date of 1/23.
So that would be a bill from our legacy system, I believe.
Okay.
And the one that is in this slide is actually one from one of our employees. And it's his recent bill in February under the new system. So it's just a slight format change with that caption.
Mm-hmm. Boy, this just looks so... Oh, okay. And then, because here it's got the energy and renewable adjustment again. Oh, no, it jumped way up. But that's still an interim rate. I'm just looking at $8 or the renewable adjustment end date of 10/24 of $3.87, jumping up to $89.14.
What was that for?
And that's, I know that's, we talked about the buckets moving around. But
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Holy criminy.
That is the main cause of the calls because they saw that line item.
Right.
Jump up.
End of our middle of December and then.
Mm-hmm. For a lot of customers, that line item jumped anywhere from $50 to $100 in 1 month.
And that's, did we also add in the rate case additional projects into that renewable bucket?
We actually took everything out of the renewable adjustment in the rate case. The renewable adjustment exists to pass back credits at present.
Yep.
It's a complex PTC tax return thing, but there are no projects.
So that's all energy. costs.
Well,
until
that was before
this increase.
So only as of February 1st that started happening. Prior to that, there were some projects still in there. So there would be some dollars associated with the renewable rider.
And now it's gone until AmeriCorps enters the scene.
It's a perception thing too, because when customers call me, this is what they're seeing. So this is my usage over here, and then this is all the other government charges that you make me pay. This is how they perceive it. And on this last bill, a lot of customers might have like $80 under here under their usage, and just the energy and renewable adjustment itself would be over $100. So their perception is, I'm paying more for all these extra stuff that you guys are charging me than I'm actually using. And that's what really is hard to get them to understand and really gets them fired up.
Yeah, because the base, when they see, and I was the same way when I looked at these bills, when I see 963 kilowatts at 0.05446, that feels to me like a cost, like a fuel cost. So then paying for 960 kilowatts, and this is the cost of the fuel, not like this is the base rate. So I think I'm sorry to say, but to me, this is a really confusing bill. It's might be better than your last one, but it's still really confusing in terms of how the information is presented. The other piece that I agree with Stacey, she was just hinting at it, the third heading, other charges and credits. It seems like we should look at a different title for that. Like, I don't know, riders or maybe it's base rates and riders or something like that, other than the way it is presented, because I just think, like, on a cell phone bill, there is like almost a fees piece that is a government portion, and that's sort of what that looks like or feels like, similar to on these bills. So I'm not surprised they're like, those dastardly politicians are charging us a bunch more money. So I don't have any solutions right now, but I do think it bears some time trying to figure out a better way to communicate the charges to the customers so they understand it.
And I want to spin off of that, because this doesn't have a solution either. But and some of this is because of utilities, and some of it's because of regulators. But we play this balancing act of trying to get plenty of data to people. But they don't have advisory staff sitting around trying to help them understand. Here we sit. We've been at this for a few years, and we're still struggling to understand these bills. And you're struggling to explain them. I assume you understand them, but you struggle to even explain them. And those customers out there are supposed to understand this when they look at it. Sometimes I think we can, in an effort to make sure they have plenty of data, provide them with data that is impossible for most people to understand on a day-to-day basis, overcomplicate things to where we cause frustrations. And I'm just going to relate another story of kind of going back to Senate years over the years, and my area was not served by Otter Tail, so you're not involved in this, but about half my constituents were with an investor owned, and about half were with a co-op, and it seemed to me that for the most part, the co-op was quite a bit more expensive. But almost all my complaints were about the investor owned, and it was about some little line, or the fact that why does my monthly bill keep changing? Well, you know, because it's, you know, X number of dollars a month, but one month they're only charging for a 28th of that, and the next month it's a 31st of it. Mm-hmm. And the co-op, you get a bill for $25. And then another bill for the energy you used, and a total. And that's it. And they get it, and they pay it, and are done with it. And some of this we're creating in an effort to be helpful, but I don't know where the line is between being helpful and actually causing frustration by providing information that's not understandable.
If I may, so through the course of this process, at least myself, and I think there's others, recognize that I think we could do a little better job of this presentment. And while we haven't made any plans, mm-hmm. we're at least having those discussions internally to find out what we can do to make this better. Because I think we all realize that this was something that was likely going to be confusing to some of our customers, mm-hmm. and maybe many of them. So I think we're definitely hearing what you're saying. Again, we will definitely take this away, and we'll have those discussions and then see what we can come up with in terms of a plan.
Mm-hmm.
Good, good. Do you involve customers in those? Just so that it's somebody who doesn't understand anything, like you guys, some having worked in the industry and being with the company, there's a lot you just take for granted that you know, that you might forget how little people on the outside get about this. So I would just offer that as if you have a little focus group and say, you know, mm-hmm. when you see this on there, what do you think that means? You might be shocked what you hear.
Mm-hmm. You might not be able to get a focus group to be willing to participate in that.
Mm-hmm. Well, if they give them lunch, I'm sure you can find somebody.
was the information that we wanted to cover? And, if you have any more questions, either now we can take them, or if you know, you think of something later, we can certainly circle back with that as well.
I hate to belabor this, but I do want to just get back to some of those huge jumps again so I understand. When 1 month it was in the energy and renewable adjustment, 1 month it was $3 or $6, and the next month it was 90. Yep. What is the reason for that?
Because that extra 2.4 cents that we was over in the base rate,
yep.
is now all being collected in that rider.
And where did it drop then? Where did they see a savings?
In the base rate.
All right, so they might have paid. So if you look in that, does that reflect that, Brian? Like if you change and look at the base rate, can
it does.
The two?
It does. One thing, it's skewed in the sense that you spiked because of the really cold weather, the longer billing cycle. So, yeah, you can see it if you understand it, how it separates out. But so you had asked about separating out the energy and the renewable adjustment.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that difficult to do, is it? But it's another line on the bill, or is it difficult to do?
No, I don't think it would be difficult. It would just be a matter of any room that we would have. I think we have enough room in that column to do that separation. We have many more line items in Minnesota and South Dakota in that column than we do in North Dakota because of taxes.
I'm not saying immediately go out and do it.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
And the new system now will facilitate,
yep.
gives us more flexibility from that standpoint. So that's...
When will they see their interim rate credit, like the credit for the overcharge from the interim rates?
April.
Dang, it's too bad that didn't come off earlier, and then we wouldn't be sitting here.
On several of these factors, frankly, the timing just could not have been sort of more unfortunate in terms of how they lined up. Had these things been more separated, I think we probably would not have had
any issues.
Have you thought about trying to break the... Well, that's not the right way. I was going to say break the system, but, well, sometimes...
Try not to do that.
We don't want anything break. Breaking is
sometimes
bad.
Sometimes you have to attack your own system. So, just putting different assumptions in where what else could... I mean, is there anything else that could happen that would create yet another surprise in the near term where customers would say, okay, things are starting to settle down, and then all of a sudden there's another spike? And then they believe exactly zero of what you said. I mean, is there a set of circumstances that are we basically smooth sailing to some degree because winter's theoretically almost done?
I think it's a takeaway in general from this last, you know, month or two here is that, you know, we certainly want to try to predict as much as we can. When these things are coming, lining up to stack on top of each other, we need to be ahead of that. We need to be messaging to our customers and equipping our customer service folks to be able to respond to that. Or I think as you're suggesting, to if we can shift something off so that it doesn't have to line up at the same time. And certainly we would, I think it preferred that in several of these factories would have much rather had it not line up at the same time. Commissioner Fedorchuk, I wanted to just highlight with the pointer, since I have it here, the charge here changing as you go to final rate. So this is representing exactly your question.
Mm-hmm. Why is there that 302 at point? Why is there three different rates?
Ron, can you answer that one on the far left
column? I believe we had declining block structure for residential in North Dakota. Mm-hmm. So we ended up prorating that declining block. I believe it was at 1,000 kilowatt hours, because that's roughly, it's 15 days. So that's where the 500 comes from.
Okay.
It's half of the 1,000. And then the remaining portion, the 302, is technically at the next step on the old rate system.
Okay. Now, and then the new rate is. Go ahead.
I would guess you have zero customers that would be able to sit and figure that out.
Oh, yeah.
From a proration standpoint, I think I would agree. Yeah. But typically they would have been used to seeing, especially if they were 1,000 kilowatt hours, the first 1,000 at 7.493 cents, and then any remaining at that next step. They would have seen that on their historic bills in the past, but not necessarily a proration like this every month.
And the interim rate adjustment, the $4, that only applied to those first 15 days?
Correct.
And then in April, so this bill, is that the next billing cycle? Is that April? Or is it one more? Because here we are in March. So are you saying they'll see the interim rate adjustment like a credit in their next billing cycle?
In April, starting in those billing cycles in April.
What's the average refund going to be?
I haven't seen, I know they're finishing up the calculations. I haven't seen the final numbers yet, but.
Okay. All right. Well, I've appreciated.
How will that credit exactly be listed on the bill? What will it say, do you know? I'm curious.
If I remember correctly, this is essentially the bottom portion of the bill.
Mm-hmm.
So we have our bills in three sections. I believe that top section, or the middle section, will say interim rate refund.
Will it say ND, interim rate refund?
I'm not 100% sure.
With a picture of Brian right there. I mean, yeah, that's not answered to it, is it, Brian?
I remember correctly, it should appear in this area here. But we can confirm that.
Okay.
I don't know if you can win having your photo on a utility bill. Go to Jamestown anytime. Okay. Anything else from that you want to Victor, Stacy?
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having the sticking with us and getting through the painful explanations.
Commissioner Crisman, any?
I will just say, I don't know, along the way there was some concern that some of your customer service reps were just basically saying it was the PSC, though, and so I hope that has stopped and will not happen in the future.
Go ahead, Ron.
Yeah, if I may, I was just going to talk briefly about that. I know early on there were a few customers that it came across as though the final rate implementation that was authorized by the commission was one of the primary reasons. Obviously, we realized that was not the right answer in and of itself. Rather, it was a factor in everything that went into some of these bills that customers were seeing. But I just wanted to say that, you know, we jumped on that right away, made sure that our customer service folks had that information. We had given them some, but we just reinforced it again as soon as we were made aware that was occurring more than what we thought it might have been. I also want to say if you don't already know, we have customer satisfaction is one of our primary goals within the customer service group, and we pride ourselves in the service that we provide. I think our customer satisfaction numbers are probably one of the higher ones in the region here, and I think we're very proud of that. Our CSRs do a very nice job, even though they may not get things right every time. But I think overall they just do a fabulous job for us. So I want to thank you for your questions today, and hopefully we've been able to answer everything that you've asked. And I know we've got some follow-up, but just want to thank you for your time today.
Yes, thank you.
Good. Look forward to the next discussion about whatever kind of proposals you have on the billing changes.
Okay.
Or suggest. I mean, I don't know. Those aren't something we have to approve, but I am curious to see what you come up with.
Okay. Very good.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. So, is Interstate still closed? Did I hear? Or?
It opened at 1.
It opened at 1.
Okay. Oh, it did, all the way to Fargo? Mm-hmm.
So, a few of you have windshield time, and then the rest just fly right over the top of it, right?
Not too bad.
How far east?
Driving back to
Tappan. I know what Tappan
is. Oh, okay. Up to Devil's Lake, is that right? Or?
So where are they from?
Oh, okay.
I was on the other side.
Just east. In between the Tappan and Pettigrew.
Oh, okay.
You can see them right there.
No, and they're
giving
you tickets.
It wasn't too bad. They're not
counting
yet, so.
Really? Oh. I was on a frontage road.
Yeah, I used to drive down the Russian Derby.
I knew he had no way around.
Oh, yeah, they do
it
every
Liberty
weekend.
Well, thank you.
I didn't like it.
Oh, so you had access to the bar to get down?
But there was a guy, his last name was Cal, and it was
and it was clear.
Yeah.
It was really good.
They still do
Light traffic, then?
There was no one on there.
Yeah.
It was like, go around. It's like a rapture happened. It was eerie.
Yeah,
it's
like you're in the park. Right? It's
like,
all these things.
Yeah, so.
Did those examples show you what you need to see them?
Misery. Once flights are changed,